Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
First of all, Ben, good morning.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you for breakfast.
Yeah, you know what? I now have a system down. I mean, Food Truck Tommy is a part of the show. And if you come here and you don't experience Tommy,
you haven't experienced the show.
Correct. And so, and there's a guy who's in his 70s, put his kids through school, gets up at 2:30 in the morning, and he puts all that together himself. And he's just a great guy. And so... and it's fun because he's crazy. He's crazy.
I noticed that.
But he's awesome. Kind of, and I wouldn't mess with him, by the way. There's a lot to talk about from, you know, the national level, obviously an incredible victory for the Republicans on the national level, although the margins in the House look to be maybe tighter than people had hoped. And I also wonder what the, if all the nominations go through, how that changes things with some Republicans in Congress. And then I want to talk about that, the nominees, and then, you know, the state level, from the fiscal guardrails to some of the races that just happened in the state, to Aaron Stewart, to pending turnover in Congress. And we have just a minute or two here, and then we'll go at 8:20. We'll have a longer segment, then another short one, then another long one. I guess I would start with... did the election go the way you thought it was going to go?
Nationally, yes. No doubt nationally.
When did you feel confident that Trump was going to win?
At the convention. Well, when did I feel confident he was going to win?
And don't Monday morning quarterback and Trump, amplify it, but be honest.
I think it was June 29th of 2024
specific.
When Joe Biden... basically,
was that the debate night?
That was a debate.
Yeah.
That's when I looked at it and I said, "Yeah, this is Trump's going to win." And then the complete chaos within the Democrat Party over what to do with Biden, I think, just continued the downward spiral.
Yeah.
And then they put in probably the most unelectable Democrat.
Why do you think she's so unelectable? I mean, I'm not saying she's a good candidate, but.
Everyone's
saying that now that she lost.
And I think she was unelected for a couple reasons. She's not someone who comes across very personable. She doesn't seem very likable. Hmm. And I don't know the woman. I don't know what she's like in her personal life and her private life with her family and her friends. But she never came across as really likable. She came across really, at least to me and a lot of people that I talk to, really lacking in understanding on policy, particularly issues that were of importance to the American people. Look, the Democrats across the country are utterly tone deaf on what's important to the people in this country, including our friends in Hartford, who the Wednesday they hold a press conference and talk about
Connecticut values.
Connecticut values, abortion, transgender. And I'm sitting here going, you lost because people can't pay their bills. Governor Lamont, people can't afford their electric bills. Thank you very much. People can't afford their groceries. Thank you very much. People can't afford to put gas in their car. Thank you very much. And you're worried about abortion and LGBTQ rights. You're completely tone deaf. William Tong, I have no idea what planet he's living on, everything he wants to talk about. Everywhere he runs around, all he talks about is abortion and protecting illegal immigrants. They're tone deaf. She was utterly tone deaf, and the Democrats across the country were tone deaf.
Let me interject for a sec. I said this, I've said this on the air, that I think that the thing with her for me was I thought some of the things she said on paper should have resonated, like we have more in common than what separates us, blah, blah, blah. I just didn't believe her, right?
Right.
And but I want to ask you quickly, because we have to take a break. If you were sort of involved with the power structure in the Democratic Party, you know, sort of knowing that Biden really, certainly couldn't serve another 4 years, forget about the election or not, what would you have done? Because they basically made the calculation, in my opinion, some people have disagreed with me, that, you know, this was the best way to win. But I was hoping for an open convention and maybe something great would emerge from it if you were a Democrat that would make you excited about democracy. But sort of your point is they were going to lose either way.
Well, I think they were probably going to lose either way. I think it might have been a more competitive election if there had been a different candidate. And quite frankly, I thought from the Democrat side, I thought their best candidate was Gretchen Whitmer from Michigan.
So it's not a gender thing.
No, absolutely not. I think, you know, they had a candidate. But we remember what, you know, Kamala Harris was like in 2020 when she ran in the primary. She was lost on stage there. You know, a lot of people beat me up when I talked about how she was basically a DEI hire.
I'm not going to touch that.
I know you're not, but I was basically quoted in, you know, Frankie Graziano's story about that, and all the Democrats came after me about it. And Frankie called me and said, "Hey, do you want to walk those words back?" I said, "Why would I walk Joe Biden's words back?" He was the one who said that he was going to take a black woman as the vice president. That was his qualification. I thought there were a lot better people that he could have probably taken in 2020 that would have put him in a better position.
I don't know about that. I think Whitmer's would have been a better candidate. It's just the problem is that even fewer people in the country know who she is, and that would have been the challenge. I push back.
That would have been true if you had the open
I think that that would have been the risk. I'm not saying that would have been the better idea. I'm just saying what would have happened maybe if they did do that.
Right.
But only in her defense, I would say that she still was, you know, a state attorney general in one of the most important states in the union, a senator and a vice president. It's not like she's a total lightweight. I need to point that out just a little bit. Your criticisms are valid. I need to go on record with that. We're here with Ben Proto, chair of the Republican Party here in Connecticut. I wish, you know, again, I'm already feel pressured by time. Your perspective on these cabinet picks, like a Matt Gaetz, you know, obviously I think the theme is he wants telegenic people. He wants people that are going to do what he wants. And with Gaetz, I'm curious if you think this theory that he's such a difficult pick that he'll make all the other difficult picks easier to get through. Like, we'll throw him to the dogs so that Gabbard can get through, so that Hegseth can get through. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Look, I think you've got to have some strategy in your nominations other than, you know, like we were just talking about off air. You know, in the past, you know, every president that has come into office has said the same thing, how they're going to change Washington. And then they put all the establishment people back into run these agencies and nothing changes. It gets worse. So I think, you know, he's probably, and this is just my opinion, don't have any factual knowledge on this. I think he's looking at picks who, I think to some extent, what you talked about, people who are going to be, you know, telegenic, who are going to be good on, you know.
And do what he says.
And do what he says. And to some extent, that's kind of their job. They work for him. And their job is to implement his agenda, just like every other cabinet position for every other president, Democrat, is to implement the president's agenda. But I think one of the things we'll probably see more of than we have in the past, and I don't know that this is necessarily a bad thing, given what we've wanted for many years in this country, is I think he's going to be more of a disruptor. And every now and then you need a disruptor to shake things up and change things. So when we're just talking about the Department of Education and Linda McMahon, that's a $45 billion, I think, roughly $45 billion.
Yeah,
your right. agency.
Mm-hmm.
How much of that $45 billion actually gets into a student's hands in some way, shape, or form in this country, or into a teacher's hand, not in the way of salaries, but in their ability to teach and educate? So if you can go in and restructure that entire agency or move it someplace else and put more of that money into the classroom and less of it into bureaucrats' hands. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's a good thing. And I think conceptually, if you're going to streamline government, hopefully that would translate into balancing the budget as opposed to just helping pay for tax cuts. I'm actually okay with that. And I want to see a more efficient government. I want to see less bloat and less bureaucracy. I guess for me, like the part I get stuck on, I don't necessarily think establishment, you know, people are the way to go, but I want to be proud of the people that represent the country. You know, and in some of these respects, these are people that I have trouble with that. Now, if they do a good job and we streamline our government in a way that's more efficient so that in the future we don't have to spend so much money on bureaucracy, I'm willing to see that through. I just want people that I admire and respect. You know what I mean? And both sides, Biden's got some people in place that I don't admire and respect either. But you don't even have to respond necessarily, but that's just how I feel about some of these picks.
No, and look, I think, you know, we all kind of grew up in an age where, you know, the president was a role model and his people were role models. And I think we've, you know, kind of gotten past that a lot where it's like, okay, I don't particularly like this guy. This is not a guy maybe I want to have dinner with or have a beer with or, you know, spend time with. But what's more important to me? Do I want somebody who I like or do I want somebody who's going to get the job done? And if my choice is between those two, I'm going to take somebody who can get the job done. If I can get both, man, I'm really happy about that. But at the end of the day, it's like any, you know, if you really think that we look at, you know, whatever the hell it is now, $2.5-3 trillion business, do I want someone who's going to go in and do the job I want them to do, the job I elected them to do, which was to change how we're doing things, to refocus the government back to the people? If that's the case, okay, I don't like some of the stuff he says, you know, personally, but his positions and policy, and this is true. I'm not just talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about who's ever in that job, he or she, who's ever in that job in the future. I want the person who's going to get the job done. And if I like them, that's good.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the decision, person over policy, and that's the problem some have, and some say with that that's lowering the bar of expectations. Like, why can't we have both? But that, I mean, your point.
Look, most people didn't like Abraham Lincoln.
I know. Listen, we talked about it. He went into the convention as like the fourth pick, and he is one of the greatest presidents ever. We're going to shift a little. I mean, this is crazy. We got to take another break. I'd like to shift to Connecticut a little bit and local and talk about not just now, but 2026, because I think you and I agree that there's going to be some pretty pronounced turnover on the congressional delegation in the next few years, and it could be an opportunity for Republicans. We'll wait to see. But the governorship, too. We'll talk about that. We're back here with Ben Proto, chair of the Republican Party here in Connecticut. Now, listen. We can talk about the election in Connecticut. We don't see eye to eye on a couple things. And I'll start with, I mean, listen, the race that was supposed to be close wasn't close. And Trump did better. I mean, the Democrats did really well in 22. And Logan lost by a nose hair. Republicans did much better in 24. And he lost by like 4x the amount he lost in 22. How do you explain that?
I think there's a couple things, and we've begun to look at some of the numbers. What we're finding interesting is the number of people who came in and voted for the top of the ticket and didn't vote the rest of the ballot. So that's one area, I think.
So there might have been a Trump vote that didn't vote for Logan. Is that your point?
Or down the ballot.
Yeah.
You know, you know, when you look at that, I think, you know, the other side of it is that particular – again, state elections and federal elections, very different turnout.
Sure.
Not only in numbers, but in the people who are voting. And when you begin to look at some of the demographic changes that are occurring in that particular part of the state, particularly in the Litchfield County area, you're seeing, you know, more folks moving into that area.
From New York.
New York and New Jersey. Mm-hmm. You know, and I always find it interesting when I talk to folks who do this, they come here and said, well, why'd you leave? I hated the politics down there. The politics were so bad. The taxes were so bad. I said, but you're coming here and bringing those politics with you. That's how you're going to vote, though, right?
Right.
And, well, yeah, but it's, so.
How much counsel do you talk to the Logan folks when they're during the campaign? Like, how involved are you?
You know, whenever they reach out to us. You know, we did a number of things. So we did, you know, again, it's understanding what the party's role is. And you know, the party's role is we don't run campaigns. That's the campaign and the candidate's job. Our job is to provide the resources and assistance and help. So we did a lot of GOTV. We did a lot of early voting work. We did a lot of modeling, voter modeling and identification, all of which is provided to the candidate and their campaign teams to utilize in their voter contact.
But like
program.
When Mike Johnson's PAC or whoever it was pulls the $600,000 away from the TV buy, did you know that was coming? Because
no.
To me, like that and the fact that George didn't even plan an election night event shows me that there were weeks before the election, everybody knew he was going to lose.
So yeah, I did. I was not aware of that. They didn't tell us that. Obviously, I learned about it the same way everybody else learned about it when it was the story broke. And look, I think you know ultimately when you look at the national money and again trying to explain how that works, they ultimately have X amount of dollars to spend, and they were looking around the country.
They needed it elsewhere, but it's also you can say that, but it's also a statement on the race here, because if they thought they could flip it, they would probably be interested in doing that. Although, you know, the argument is that maybe there were some seats they expected to keep or in jeopardy. We're talking with Ben Proto, chair of the Republican Party. The other one I was a little bit critical, I don't know of you, but of the Republican Party, was the situation for Senate. Now, Murphy wasn't going to lose. Because he's just the name identification, and it is what it is. But the fact that Jerry Smith wins the nomination and then loses the primary to somebody who jumped in at the 11th hour, that doesn't look good. You know, that's hard to even compete under those circumstances because people are like, what's going on?
Well, I think the other side of it is you had less than an 8% turnout in the primary.
But it doesn't matter, though, Ben.
Well, it does kind of matter because I think...
Well, you even had Jerry in here telling me, listen, we're focused on the general election. Then he loses the primary.
And again...
And he's a good guy. I like him.
I like Jerry, too. I like Matt. Look, Matt did yeoman's work coming in.
Yeah, I like him, too.
And did you know, he ran a great campaign.
Not personal. I'm just talking about objectively.
No, and I think, you know, it's interesting. I get beat up for not, you know, having candidates, but then I get beat up when we said you're trying to put your hand on the scale as to who the candidate should be. So it's a no-win situation from the party perspective in that regard. But I think, look, ultimately... When you look at, you know, something like that, it was, you know, a situation. I think the mistake that Jerry made was focused on the general election when you have to get through a primary. And that happens a lot on both sides that, you know, oh, I'm the candidate, I'm the nominee, and I'm running against Chris Murphy. No, you're running against Matt Corey, and Matt Corey is running against
Chris. But
you
got to admit it's not a great look when the guy who gets the nomination loses the primary. But yeah. I can't remember that ever happening.
I can.
But you've been in longer than me.
So do you.
Who?
2022.
Who?
Themis.
Oh, yeah. True.
Right?
But then Trump put the thumb on that scale. But yeah, that is definitely.
And actually,
didn't look good for the party either. Right. So it doesn't necessarily negate my point.
And I think, you know, again, when you look at some stuff, you know, particularly in 22, I think it was less Trump and more Mar-a-Lago the day before. But ultimately, it's. Look, I don't like the convention process myself. I would go to a direct primary.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can tell you, had you had a direct primary, you can't get into that race the week before.
Right.
Right? You have to be out doing stuff. You have to be out talking to voters, not to 1,200 delegates, but to voters. I would rather see us go to a direct primary
system. Can you change that?
No, it's a state law.
Oh.
Because of the way it's structured.
The
other issue that you have with a direct primary system is the citizens election program. You'd have to rejigger the entire public financing program to make that work.
Got it. Ben Proto, chair of the Republican Party here in Connecticut. Oh, man. I got so much left. We haven't talked guardrails. So I want to get to Aaron Stewart for a second. You know, everyone's pointing to her as sort of the Republican savior for the gubernatorial race. And then some people tell me she had trouble raising money, and I don't know. But my thought is that, and she said she's not sure she's going to run, and some people say, well, she's going to wait to see what Lamont decides. And I feel like, and she's going to be with us, I think if it's not the week after Thanksgiving, she's going to come in for an hour. And I have a good relationship with Aaron, and I think she's done a nice job. She has to run, in my opinion. Because if she's not mayor of New Britain and doesn't run this election, what's she going to do for 4 years to stay in the public eye? Maybe she goes out and makes some money. I don't know. But it doesn't help her with getting people in Fairfield County to know who she is, or getting people in Litchfield County to know who she is. So, like, I feel like she probably knows what she's doing, but she's sort of, I think, sort of tipped her hand. She has to run, in my opinion.
Look, I've spoken with Erin, and we're going to talk some more. I think she's having some, very in-depth conversations with her husband and her family. And
she's got two young kids.
And she's got two young kids. That makes it very, that's hard for anybody, any parent to do that, because you're giving up almost 2 years of your life to do this. Look, I think Erin would be a great candidate. I think there's other folks out there who are looking at it who could be great candidates as well.
You have to say that. That's fine. Go ahead.
But there are. I think there are.
I think she, by saying what she did, she froze out a lot of people.
She forced people to have to make a decision, which is never a bad thing if you're in that catbird seat.
I think it was smart.
Absolutely. Yeah. She's a smart pal. She's gotten a lot better over her, 10 or 12 years in the mayor's office. She's matured a lot. She's grown a lot. I think she has a really much better understanding of government and politics than she did when she started, which is a good thing, because there's a lot of candidates on either side who don't often grow in that way. Right. I think she's in a good position. But I think, when we come out of, this cycle and, moving into 25 and 26, it's going to be a lot of groundwork that's going to have to be laid. A lot of foundations are going to have to be built that we're going to be working on, not only from within the party, but I think candidates out there as well who are starting to build some structures to do that. And, what we talked about off air, there may be a couple of open congressional seats in 26. The beauty of 26 for the Republican Party is there's no U.S. Senate race. And that's key. You don't have a Dick Blumenthal or Chris Murphy with $10 or $14 million being just dropping it
at the top of the ticket.
And so that, I think, becomes beneficial. What Lamont's going to do, what the governor's going to do, he's indicated, I think he's going to talk about it after this legislative session, which is smart by him. And he obviously has the ability to wait as long as he wants, both from a financial perspective as well as being the incumbent.
Do you think he runs?
I don't know.
Come on, give me some answers.
Go out on a limb. Do I think he
give
runs?
Me something.
I think he's going to have a serious conversation with himself about this. I know there's a lot of people who want him to run, but we also know that third terms for governors tend to destroy legacies. And if he's interested in his legacy, if he's interested in looking, talking about what he's talked about, where he's really changed things, he's turned the state around, a lot of the stuff that he said, I don't necessarily agree that he's done, but that's fine. That's his position. If that's important to him going forward, then I think he has to seriously consider whether he wants to do a third term, because nothing good comes in a third term.
But that's just based on sort of feel and some precedent. Right. I mean, it's not necessarily data. I mean, if you look at the budget projections, he's going to be in the black for his whole second term now, basically. So, or at least the first half of it, and things can obviously change in the economy. But does that mean you think he might not?
I think he might not. I think he's going to have, like I said, a serious conversation with himself and his family. And I think, you're right. They're in a good position right now. A lot of that can change. He's been on he's been on an economic upturn in the state when the rest of the people in the state of Connecticut have been on an economic downturn, which I think he's going to have to deal with in the next election if he runs, is to defend how it is that he got the state so healthy when when the Connecticut citizenry got so unhealthy economically.
Sure, but you don't advocate for them to spend more in the budget. So, I mean, you know what I mean? You can't have your cake and eat it too. I think he's hard to beat if he runs again. And I think
incumbents are always hard to beat.
Well, and especially since he's been at 60% approval for, ever since the pandemic, he's been in the top 10 most popular governors. But if he doesn't run, the Democrats are going to eat themselves to try to get that nomination. So if there were a lot of clarity behind a person in the Republican Party, it would give them a much better chance
to win. I absolutely agree. And look, if he doesn't run, take the popcorn and the soda and just sit in the chair and watch the clown show that's going to come out of the other side.
You've already kind of seen it.
You're already seeing it now. They're already trying to knife each other to figure out who's going to get there. It's kind of fun to watch.
I'm pretty close to a couple of people involved, too.
It's good for you. It's good for your industry.
it certainly is. Now, I mean, when I point to the congressional delegation, I think Himes is there for a while.
Himes, where's Himes going to go?
Well, I think, first of all, and again, like, I'm an independent, unaffiliated, I think he's a talented guy.
I don't disagree. But where's he going in that caucus?
Well, I mean, some people have whispered to me that he wouldn't mind being governor. And I think he would be an excellent governor. He's a moderate. He's pragmatic when it comes to foreign policy. And, he's not some total free spender. Like, I think his background to me is appealing. So I don't know what his ambitions are. I'm not close enough to him to know. But I was just going to say, you can comment. He's sticking around. If Hayes wins, she'll stick around. DeLauro, I mean, I don't...
Her mother lived to 104.
Okay.
Served on the board of aldermen until I think she was 98.
But DeLauro and Larson and Courtney, regardless of what you think of them, I mean, they're in their 70s. She's in her 80s.
Yep.
At some point in the next couple of years, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Larson and Courtney said this is their last term.
Neither would I.
And I get along great with both of them. I just think that may be the case, and I think it'd be smart, because one thing you learned about media, and you saw it in politics, you can't always choose your end point, and it's nice to do that. So if you have the chance to do that, you might want to swallow a little ego and just go out with grace and admiration.
I agree, and I think you're right. I think John Larson and Joe Courtney, I think, are going to give serious consideration. They're going to be in the minority again for 2 years. That's a hard place to be, particularly in what that climate's going to be down there over the next 2 years. It's going to be very difficult for them to do things. You know, I know Joe keeps pushing on the subs, but he's already lost one sub. Is he going to lose more? What's going to happen with the sub base? Does the Trump administration and the defense secretary look at it and say, hey, we don't really need that sub base there. There's a better place for us to put it. You know, does he have to go fight that battle again? John Larson came very close last time in 22 from losing from folks pushing on the far left against him. They just screwed it all up. I was surprised they didn't come back again this year to do it. I think those two are probably the most likely not to run in 26. I don't know if they will or they won't, but they're the most likely. You know, Rosa, Lord only knows what Rosa's going to do. She's been there 34 years. God bless her. purple hair and all. I think Himes is in actually from a congressional position. If he wanted to run for governor as a sitting congressman, the amount of money that would flow into that campaign out of Washington that others in Connecticut could not tap and cannot tap under our finance laws if they're going to use CEP, which all of them would have to use, puts him head and shoulders above everybody else.
We're out of time, Ben. Before the session or right around the session when we come back, because I want to talk about the budget.
Absolutely.
I think it's a hugely important issue that a lot of Connecticut people need to hear about, and we need both sides of the aisle on that. Ben Proto, chair of the Republican Party, thanks for making the effort to come here today.
Happy to be here, Brian. Thanks for breakfast. And Tommy, you do great stuff out there, buddy.
Yeah. In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole with its V-shaped stud configuration is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.